Welcome to It's Not That Deep with me, Lucy Woods, a mindfulness teacher.
And me, Adrienne Kirk, a psychotherapist. Every episode, we discuss navigating the messiness of everyday life.
We know it's a big subject, but we will do our best to discuss it lightly and make some sense of it all.
In this episode, we're discussing, why do I feel like I'm going to be in trouble?
Is this one about me? It's about me, isn't it?
Well, I mean... You certainly suggested it, but I think it's something that lots of us can relate to, that sense of any minute now, I'm going to do something wrong or somebody's going to notice I've done something wrong. It's very much a something that's about to happen. It's a future thing, not a I know I've done this thing wrong and I'm going to be in trouble for it, but a sense of I'm not sure why, but I'm about to be in trouble.
Yeah, it's completely related to the future. And it's my anxiety response at its fullest. I mean, sometimes I used to wake up in the morning feeling like I was going to be in trouble without any foundation for it at all. Like absolutely nothing to hang it on. Just something bad's going to happen and it's probably me and I'm at fault. And I know that this is something shared by lots of clients who live with anxiety that I work with and possibly you do too. It's just a sense that whenever anything goes wrong, it's probably my fault.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, I would say, because I'm a therapist, that this comes from our childhoods, right? This comes from the way that we're parented. And if we have quite authoritarian parents, you know, and also particularly if that not only are they authoritarian, but it's not very consistent. So sometimes you're in trouble for something and sometimes you're not, you know, that we don't learn how to predict that.
Yeah.
And so we're left with that sense that we might be in trouble and we're not sure why.
And I also think it can come from consistent parenting if your parents are constantly anxious themselves. Because they're also feeling like that. So they're projecting that on you. Don't do that. You might get in trouble, you know. So you're constantly living with that sense of high alertness that don't do that, you might fall. Don't do that, you might this. Don't do it. It's restriction.
There is danger. Everywhere they look, there is danger. And that, you're right, that very desire they have to keep you safe, actually what that does is transmit their anxiety about danger around every turn.
Yeah, so I think it's both of those things. It's exactly what you said. If you've lived in a household with unpredictable parents and you don't know and you're treading on eggshells, then you learn to fine-tune that ability to look for danger. Or if you're just told that there might possibly be danger everywhere because your parents are anxious as hell, you also learn that skill. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we see that a lot, right? That we can end the reasons we've ended up somewhere in some sort of emotional baggage can come from a number of different places, you know. But fundamentally, we then have to, I guess, find a way to kind of manage that. And as we always say, the first step is noticing that we do it.
Yeah.
I think that's really hard, right? Because if it's your normal to always have your meerkat, I always think of it as my inner meerkat on the lookout for danger, right? If she's always driving the bus, you know, then that's normal. So it's really hard to notice that that's what you're doing.
And I think it, for me particularly, because that's what I worked with first before I became a mindfulness teacher, obviously mindfulness became part of my life. And so much of that is about awareness and noticing, was actually catching that the moment my eyes open in the morning, that kick in the stomach of the possible doom that was impending, to actually catch it and say, what's this about? What is this? Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it just a physical response? And as we were just talking earlier, we were talking about how much of this stuff is held in the body and the way the body is primed for the fight. Being able to then pause, take a few breaths, remind myself that, no, this is fine. Everything's okay. Bringing some soothing to the body can then enable the mind to come back on the rational, logical bit to go, it's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's a really powerful way of controlling it. And we've got to have noticed that we're in that state when we wake up first, right? Rather than that's just how we are. That's just, you know, that's just how I am. And therefore, I don't have a sense of control over that. And of course, because our brains have a confirmatory bias, then every so often, we will have got something wrong. We will be in trouble, no matter how small that is, right? I'll have forgotten to do something, or my to-do list has got out of control, or whatever it is, right? And something happens and I am in trouble. And that might have been a work situation in sort of previous life or at school or whatever. And so the brain remembers those things and you go, ha, you see, it is always my fault. I am right to be vigilant because look what happens.
Yeah, because we're human, we're going to make those mistakes, and how we then respond is what's really important. And that primed kind of reactivity when we get into a fluster or we catastrophize about what the consequences of what's just happened might be, it's just such a familiar pattern to like, oh yeah, I've done it again, I'm such an idiot. And inner critic can start really kicking in at those points as well. I mean,
absolutely.
Today alone, I have messed up on a number of things, and I'm quite pleased that I'm not in full-blown catastrophizing mode. It is what it is, you know, but actually that's taken me a long time. And don't get me wrong, I feel still quite strongly that I've made a mistake, but there's more compassion for the fact that I'm quite overloaded today, and that's why I've made the mistakes, and I'll do everything I can to apologize and put it right. And it's the behavior. It's not me as a human being faulty. It's circumstantial.
No. Absolutely. And I think that's really important. There's kind of two things I want to say. So one of them is that I've had the opposite experience today, which is that before I came on this call, I had this sudden lurch in my gut that actually the client that I normally see at lunchtime today, and who cancelled, right? She cancelled. So I took her out my diary. But I had that sudden lurch that it wasn't this week she cancelled, it was last week and I've missed her, okay? And it's not true. It's not true. It's definitely this week. But there's that sort of searching for something to have the stomach lurch over, which is sort of the opposite of yours, right? I absolutely have not cocked up on this. I haven't.
I do that all the time, though.
And I know I haven't, because there's no messages from her. I've checked the emails and it was definitely for this week and all is well, you know, but there is that kind of, I must have done something wrong.
So that's interesting, because with the things where I've just made a mistake and it just affects me, really, I know I've let other people down, but it's a consequence to myself. It's complicated. But anyway, but I also get that sense that when I'm supposed to have done something or booked something in for something or whatever, and I've probably done it wrong. That's the default. I've probably done it wrong. It's probably going to be a disaster, and I don't know how to fix that because it's too big. And I've got a rental property, a holiday rental property, and it's around when people book dates in for me. And then I think I've booked them wrong. I'm sure someone else is going in at that time. And then I could quite easily get into a bit of a tailspin about that. Have to kind of rein myself back and say, it's probably okay. It usually is. Do you remember me saying this in previous podcasts?
Yeah. And I use that so often with clients, and sometimes it's hard to remember it for myself, but I know just what you mean, you know, that it's that diary thing. At the moment, my work diary is in a state of flux. I have some clients ending, I have other ones starting, and I have that kind of gut reaction every time I put a new client in that, oh no, I've put them in on top of somebody else's slot. And it's not. And I know it's not, because my records are good, you know, because I keep up to date with them. Yeah. But there's that instant kind of, I've probably done it wrong. And then I have to remind myself, I probably haven't done it wrong. It's probably fine. It usually is.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because actually my things today are all diary related. I'm just in the back of my head, I'm thinking, but how can I prevent this from happening? How can I make sure that I do always write things down properly in the diary? And of course, I don't know any other way. menopause brain is not my friend at this time in life as well. Mm. And that really acts against me, but is the reason that I'm able to give myself that little bit more compassion than I would have done once upon a time. I think beating myself up for it does not correct the behaviour. It just makes me more fearful and therefore more prone to mistakes.
It's absolutely, yeah, of course. As soon as we're fearful, then, you know, then our attention is not good. And so we're much more likely to make a mistake, you know. And I used to trust my memory because it used to be really, really good. And it's,
yes.
And that habit, that learning that new habit to always changing it in the diary at that moment, right? So saw a client earlier on today and she's going to come at a slightly different time next week. And I had to do it while she was in the room. I had to change the diary in there and then, because there is no guarantee that by the time I've seen her out and come back to my office, that
it's
I'm going
gone.
To remember. And I've had to learn that I can no longer trust my short-term memory. And therefore the fix is to update my diary immediately.
Yeah, that sounds really important. And I do intend to do that. I just sometimes forget.
Yeah,
and because I've been away for a couple of weeks, things dropped in whilst I was on holiday. I wasn't in work mode. I wasn't that vigilant. But I tell you what's coming out of this for me is control. You know, that seems to be the thing that,
yeah,
it's that fear of not being in control of a certain situation that's driving
Absolutely.
This anxious response and thinking that we're going to be in trouble. And it comes from that authoritarian parenting and is echoed by subsequent bosses or other people in authority that I've had to deal with who make me feel a bit uneasy, that just feed that old pattern. And so it's learning strategies to try and feel more like I'm in the driving seat, you know, that I do have choice over it, that feels quite important.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also being able to recognize that pattern, right? It came as a massive revelation to me when I realized that an old boss, that what she triggered in me was similar to a childhood situation. And once I realized that, I was able to go, and she's not that person. She's not. So I probably don't need the same reaction. But it took a long time to notice that pattern, right? Because once I was in it, I was just responding or reacting in the way I had as a child, which
that's
is not
exactly
great for workplace.
No, that's exactly what happened to me. And it's exactly that point is when I found mindfulness. And through practicing mindfulness and getting that sense of perspective on what was happening, that's when I sort of saw this pattern play out. And it wasn't named quite as explicitly as that, but I did have some talking therapy at the same time as starting mindfulness. And so I think the two things combined made me realize this is what's going on. And it wasn't even about me. You know, we talked about the boundaries last week. This was completely about her and her way she thought was a good way to be a boss, which was terrible. And it wasn't about me because she treated everybody like it. You know, everybody was crying. Everybody was in trouble. I just would react more strongly often because I was the one that was, you know, more nervous and walking around on eggshells and wanting to be the good girl. You know, in my life, I've done my best and she made me feel like nothing was ever good enough. And that was a familiar echo from some previous
absolutely.
Experience.
Yes. Yeah, and I remember you talking about kind of that idea of sort of moving away from bad rather than moving towards good. So I guess it triggers that as well, right? I'm trying to be a good girl. I'm trying to save myself from trouble.
Yeah, definitely. I used to go to work so that I wouldn't get the sack. You know, it wasn't because it was like always I'd be early because I didn't want to get in trouble for being late. You know, all the motivators were not these kind of, oh, that would be nice too. It was always about how can I avoid trouble? How can I avoid, you know, getting told off as a fully
well, and that's
grown
the thing,
adult.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say that's the thing. It's the being in trouble is it's about the consequences of being found out, of being found wanting. You know that the not good enoughness of it.
Yeah, and I think it shows up sometimes within friendship groups and other relationships as well. I mean, we talked quite a lot about work, but I think, well, especially holding on to the sense if someone else is down or if they only respond curtly to my text message, I must have done something wrong. Not that they're busy or they're in a bad mood and they just can't be bothered, but that it must be my fault.
Yeah, that sense of being responsible for everything. Yeah.
I think John said to me once, you're not that important, you know, he meant it in a kindly way. The universe does not revolve around me. I am not responsible for all of the things going wrong in the world. And it's quite a good perspective to get sometimes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do sometimes sort of say that to clients, you know, particularly if they're catastrophizing about, you know, things they've done. You're like, you're not that powerful, you know. So that whole sort of touch wood, or if I do this, then, you know, then I've best not say I'm going to a barbecue at the weekend because I'll make it rain. You're not that powerful. Simply don't have that level of control.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I don't really have that with superstitions. I'm quite kind of vehement about I won't be sucked into that because that's foolish. But yet I still have these familiar patterns play out in how I feel responsible for someone else's bad mood, even if I haven't seen them for a week or something. It must have been something I did. Maybe I did it 3 years ago and they're just remembering it right now and that's why they're not talking to me. Yeah.
And then that anxiously kind of going through your brain, what could I have done? What could it have been? And then I kind of come up with these weird scenarios. There's that thing I remember from 20 years ago where I, whatever it was, you know, I wasn't quite perfect. And you think, would anybody actually remember that?
Yeah, I just need to read you something that someone sent to me yesterday. They sent me a meme that said, stop worrying about what other people think. I mean, have you met other people? They're awful. Which, you know, on the one hand, I thought, yeah, but I include myself in the awful. You know, that's the story, isn't it? I'm awful. So it didn't really, like, it resonated as in stop worrying about yourself, everything. Get that bit. But, you know, other people are awful. I'm another person. You know, maybe, and I put back, maybe we're all awful in our own way. And they put, speak for yourself. And I thought, I would love your level of just absolute kind of confidence in that you're a good person. I don't have that. I mean, I don't think I'm a bad person, but I don't have this absolute kind of belief in I'm fine, everyone else is, you know, the problem. So no. It made me laugh.
Absolutely. And I wonder if there is a gender issue here, right? Because just thinking, it's something I talk with my girlfriends about, right? Is that if their male partner is in a bad mood, then my assumption and their assumptions are that we've done something wrong. We have caused whatever this upset is. Whereas our male partners don't appear to have that. They go, oh, she's in a bad mood, or must have been something in her day. Clearly not me. And I don't know whether that's just that we're similar women and we've picked similar men.
Or if there is a
way in which we're brought up, you know, that as little girls we're brought up to consider others and to put their needs before our own, to be good, right? I mean, you know, not to stop when we step out of a shop door, or not to, you know, that the most annoying thing in the world, stopping when people step off the escalator in the underground, just to hold the door open, just to be careful that you're always checking that the people around you, even if they're random people in the street, are okay and not affected by you.
Yeah, and I think it is something in perhaps the way that little girls are brought up to ensure they're looking after everyone and being, you know, others' needs are catered for, like you said, and that's not put on male members of the household as much, I don't think. You know what I mean? Mm. So therefore you are always attuned to the fact that you're responsible for other people's happiness, maybe in a way more than boys are. I don't know. I think there might be something in that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have children and I'm one of two girls. So our upbringings were really, really similar. There wasn't that that different. I don't really have anything to judge it.
Yeah. But you know, the boys will be boys, but girls will be nice. You know, girls are sweet and are pretty and, you know, well behaved, and boys are rambunctious and whatever. It's kind of aligned with that whole way of thinking, which is so outdated, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. I always remember my grandmother saying, "Oh, boys will be boys," when one of my cousin's kids was trying to post his toast into the video recorder. This is how old this story is. Post his toast into the video recorder. And even then I remember thinking, I wonder if one of the little girls had done that, whether that would be, you know, because that boys will be boys thing, it felt like a justification for bad behaviour to me.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? So going back to the whole kind of, how do we support ourselves in not feeling like we're going to get in trouble all the time? You mentioned right up front about noticing it, because without the knowledge that it's happening or that we're responding in this way, we can't really hope to do anything about it. We're just in it, we're caught, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard to, it sounds really easy, but it's hard to do if it's your way of being, to sort of be able to step back a bit and view yourself, view your behaviors and kind of what's going on in your body is a hard thing to learn to do in the first place, I think.
That's what mindfulness courses are for.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the predominant first three or four sessions of, let's learn how to pay attention. Let's learn how to really recognize what is and isn't okay within ourselves. Yeah,
and that's why it's a course, right? Because it's not easy to do.
Oh, yeah. And even after the course, it's not like you know exactly, but you know how. You know how to practice.
Yes.
But it's a muscle we have to train, just like going to the gym or just like, you know, we go and get fit. It really is something that we can train and awareness can develop. And the beauty is, it's a gift that keeps on giving. You know, 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, you notice more and more and you become more attuned to the way that you are. It doesn't get rid of the anxiety necessarily, but it certainly helps you to catch it, to notice it, to work with it, to befriend it. That's something I'm really kind of keen to help people with. And often,
absolutely,
when we're
to make choices, then what we do with it.
Yeah, well, that's the key thing, isn't it? If we know what's happening, then we can choose. And the other thing is to recognize it's a story often that we're telling ourselves.
And yeah, I say that so often, you know, to clients and myself, frankly, that just because it was a thought doesn't make it true. It just doesn't. And brains are really good at trying to keep us safe and spotting danger. The trouble is, we generalize danger to be almost anything. And so to catch ourselves telling the story and be able to go, one of my clients said she started saying to her thoughts, "Nice story, bro."
Oh, I love that.
Which I absolutely adore. I think it's brilliant, right? Because it's lighthearted and it's not a way of beating herself up, but it is a way of acknowledging that it's a story.
Oh, I love that. I'm stealing that. Can I share that in my training?
Of course.
I think
you
that's
can.
Hilarious. Oh, because I'm always saying, "All right, little Miss Critical Pants, thanks for that, but it's not helpful right now." You know, that's the kind of conversation that goes up in my head when a "You shouldn't have done this," or something comes in. It's like, all right. But I love the "nice story, bro." But yeah, no, thanks. How creative of me. Brilliant
yes,
stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, Adrian. Is there anything else you think we should add on?
Yeah, I'm not sure I do off the top of my head. It's the catching it, the noticing it, and the allowing, the gentle changing of that thought, I think, of just, you know, kind of going, "Nice story, bro."
Exactly. I think that's very, very important. We're not trying to stop thinking or push it away or fight it, because that's often the biggest problem we have, is wrestling with our minds, but actually just acknowledging it as a thought, a process, an aspect of experience, not something that's true. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Love that.
You've been listening to It's Not That Deep with Adrienne Kirk and Lucy Woods. If you've enjoyed listening, then why not subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode?